From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made Tuesday night with the first presidential debate. Every serious and scientific poll shows a win for Vice President Kamala Harris, but Donald Trump has lost debates in the past, and in 2016, for example, it didn't matter. He won the election. All of which is to say, it is impossible to know what actually moves voters to vote or changes the minds of people who already had felt like they had decided. What we do know is there are tens of thousands of undecided voters in the seven swing states that will decide this election. What did they hear and see on Tuesday? What were the kinds of moments and messages that could affect how they decide to cast their ballots? Again, it's impossible to know, but that's the central question here. It's not how you felt or how a Trump voter felt or a hardcore Harris voter felt. I mean, that cake is pretty well baked. It's a question of whether this mattered. And directionally, what moves here. And I want to bring in a couple of guests to weigh in on this. Monroe County Legislator Sean McCabe is with us from District Number 6, traveling on the road and generous with his time. Thank you, Sean. How are you?
Very good, Evan. How about yourself?
Very good. Thank you for making time for us. Jerry Lynn Sparks also with us, a former congressional press secretary and founder of the Riga Democrats. Jerry, welcome back to the program.
I'm happy to be here, Evan.
So, Jerry, let me start with you. You said on this program just... Oh, boy, is it 2 months, and not even 2 months ago, that you were not in favor of the Democrats moving to Kamala Harris, that you did want them to move off Joe Biden, that you had big concerns about Kamala Harris's electability, and now we've seen a lot, and we've seen a debate. Have your feelings changed at all?
Yes, and I'm actually surprised. She really impressed me, and any doubts that I had are completely erased. I'm rarely completely surprised, but she has done everything right. And I think the reason it's still as close as it is because of what you said earlier, the cake is already baked, and the remaining people, I don't know if they're going to be moved or not, but she's done everything like textbook perfect.
Okay. Sean McCabe, what do you see in this election in terms of, how likely it is that you see another Trump term and how things have gone so far for the Republican candidate?
I think he didn't do terrible. I mean, there were some areas I would have liked to have seen him do better on. I think his comments on immigration and that's what is pushing voters, I think, is super important. I mean, I do think immigration is on people's minds. And the question that keeps being asked, are you better off today than you were 4 years ago? And when you look at the prices, inflation, everything else, I do think that that does swing his way for that undecided voter. If they're looking at those two issues in and of themselves, I do think that's where an undecided voter is going to lean more towards former President Trump than Vice President Harris.
Yeah, it's interesting that, that's a good place to start. I want to approach the issue of how Donald Trump did not I think Sean McCabe just made a better case than Donald Trump did on Tuesday for Donald Trump. in many ways, Trump was baited. And, by now, even Fox News' Brit Hume, Bill O'Reilly over on Newsmax, they have railed about how easily Trump was baited and lost his focus. But there is another layer to this. Longtime Republican strategist Karl Rove, along with Ezra Klein, of course, a Democrat of The New York Times, said this morning, they both said separately this morning, that what Kamala Harris was doing was actually quite risky. She did not directly answer questions on immigration. And instead, she offered what was kind of an obvious and clunky piece of bait. And if Trump had the discipline to recognize it and resist it, it could have backfired for Harris. And instead, Trump was manipulated. I mean, Karl Rove said he embarrassed himself. He couldn't help it. Rove wrote, quote, Trump was crushed by a woman he previously dismissed as dumb as a rock, which raises the question, what does that make him, end quote. And so the risk that Harris took, though, was to say to the American people, I'm not going to answer the question on immigration. I want to see how easily this guy can be manipulated, because if he can be manipulated by me when the stakes are high in a campaign, imagine how easily he will be manipulated by dictators during a worldwide confrontation. And yeah, it worked for her on Tuesday. Well, I'll start with you, Jerry. You didn't think that, again, you've talked about how much you've changed your opinion of Harris. Will this matter to voters? Will those moments matter to voters?
I think that she gave Trump some of his own medicine. I think she was a much more pointed communicator than Hillary Clinton was. No offense to Hillary Clinton, but this is a person that is a prosecutor. This is a person that's been an attorney general. So she really knows how to read the room and get results. And that's really a good template for what we need her to do in the global stage. So I don't think it's going to hurt her that in this first debate, she gave Trump some of his own medicine. Finally, I mean, there were so many of us that wanted to see that. And I do believe that she's incredibly intelligent. And if Trump has the nerve to face her again in a second debate, I don't see what he would gain from that. But if he does, then I think she'll come with more policy. This was her probably one chance to show the American people, look, I'm tough, I'm a leader, I am presidential.
But Jerry, I think the argument is that in a second debate, if he will listen to criticism, private criticism, mm-hmm. how he will handle that moment the next time is to say, listen, Kamala Harris was just asked a question on immigration. She didn't answer it. And she pivoted to my rallies. I don't want to hear, I'm not here to talk about my rallies. You can come to my rallies, you can come to hers. She should answer the question on immigration. And Ezra Klein was saying this morning, had he done that, had he been disciplined enough to do that, it could have gone much different. But he didn't. Are you concerned that in a second debate, that moment could go differently?
No, I think she's going to be prepared for it. She showed herself to be incredibly prepared for the first debate. She did everything she needed to do for the first debate.
Okay. And then, Jerry, before I turn to Sean on this, I think the question at the core of this is, you know, again, not what I think or Sean thinks or you think, but you know, you've had experience working with a campaign trying to flip congressional districts that have long been Republican, for example.
And we did.
And you did. And you won a race that had long been held by a Republican. And mm-hmm. so you had to work on what is going to attract those voters who might be persuadable. Is that the kind of moment? I mean, she clearly had a calculation that if she baited mm-hmm. him, he could kind of go off the rails there. And her hope yes. is that people will see that as he is unsteady, unstable, that he is not the guy you want making hard decisions. He's too easily manipulated. Do you think voters take it that way?
Yes, especially women voters. I think she did an incredible amount of good for the undecided female voters. She came off as stable, steady, informed, and intelligent. And the key to the R+4 district that we flipped was we got out there and just, you know, boots on the ground. It was just constantly outworking the opponent, and that's what she has to do.
All right, I've already got a note from a listener. Bob says she did answer the question. She brought up how Trump blocked the bipartisan bill earlier this year. That is fair enough. That is true. She said during the debate that the Lankford bill, James Lankford, a Republican from Oklahoma who helped negotiate that bill on the border, was blocked last winter. People like Mitt Romney and others blamed Trump, said that he didn't want that issue solved for the election. Mm-hmm. Harris did say that she would sign that kind of a bill going forward. So, you know, fair enough there. I mean, I don't want to get into the minutiae of everything that was said, but I'm just characterizing this the way I think that a lot of people saw it, which is that she briefly gave an answer on immigration and then she deflected to try to see if she could put bait out there for Donald Trump. And it worked. And Sean, I mean, like, does that moment to you, Sean McCabe, say that Trump has lost a step? He is easily distracted and manipulated by issues of personal vanity. And God forbid if that's Putin in a room doing that. God forbid if that's someone else.
I mean, I do think he came in, I don't know if the right word would be, too amped up, and he lost focus. I think there were so many things that, you know, especially around the immigration issue, he could have talked about human trafficking, the fentanyl coming in. There were areas where she did manipulate him and baited him, like Karl Rove said, and, you know, he failed to rise to the occasion. I do agree that in a second debate, he's going to turn it around, because really she didn't talk about what she's going to do. I mean, beyond signing the Lankford bill and other things, you know, focus in on what you're going to do, and there was not really a lot of substance. I mean, she spent all night trying to make Trump look bad, and she did a good job of that. I'm going to give her credit.
I need to weigh in here, Evan.
Go ahead, Jerry, but I'm going to let Sean have plenty of time there, too. Go ahead, Jerry.
Okay, so first of all, Trump never had focus. He has always been about Trump, so that's his only focus. Second of all, Kamala was the one who actually gave specifics for small business tax breaks and for families. So she actually gave specific policies. So I don't like the way that the Republicans are characterizing her as only going after Trump. She just gave him some of his own medicine. And it was important for her to show her strength. There's nobody that's going to own Kamala Harris in a meeting with Putin or whoever. And she proved that. And that was really important.
Well, okay. So Sean, but your view, Sean, is that Trump will learn from this and that a second debate would be different.
Oh, 100%. I mean, I think, you know, again, if he listens to his advisors and people that are, you know, telling him the way to handle things, I do. I think he would be better. And again, I mean, I think, you know, from a Jerry standpoint or my standpoint, you know, you're not swinging those left voters or those right voters. You're swinging those independent voters. That's what everybody needs to be focused on as a Republican, as, you know, Trump. If I was on the Trump campaign, that would be my concern. I'd be looking at independent blank voters. How can I get them? And again, focusing on immigration, focusing on the economy are two areas where he should have been stronger. And I think he got sidetracked. And, you know, I'll give Vice President Harris, she did a good job of that. But to criticize Trump and say he's all about Trump all the time, I don't know if that's going to swing a voter one way or the other. I mean, I think it comes down to the issues that are impacting the American people. That's where the vote's going to be decided. You know, there's people who don't like Donald Trump that are going to vote for Donald Trump because they like what he's going to do or what the Republican Party in control is going to do with the economy, with immigration, et cetera. You don't necessarily have to like the person. At the end of the day, I don't like Trump's personality personally. I don't. I was more of a Nikki Haley fan. But at the end of the day, I think that you have to reach out to that independent voter. That's where the difference is going to be made. It's not the Republicans. It's not the Democrats. They're already decided. You've got to hit those blank voters.
Yeah. And you know, Sean, you bring up, you know, kind of a your own disposition that maybe you'd rather see Nikki Haley. Maybe you were ready for a different Republican. But the reality is what it is. And so, how do we deal with this moment? There's a lot of people in my own family who are, there's plenty of Nikki Haley voters. There's plenty of Trump voters in my family. And what I'm curious to know is for those small C conservatives, the lifelong Reagan conservatives, a Romney conservative, a McCain conservative, when they hear Trump once again denying the election and then telling voters right before we're about to have another election that they can't trust American elections unless he wins. Do you think that plays well with people who are kind of on the fence? Do you think that turns people off?
I do. I mean, I do. I think it was terrible. I think his answer around January 6th, I think his comments around that were, you know, that was one of the areas where he did poorly. You know, you can't, I mean, he spends too much time talking about the 2020 election. I mean, as a party and as a person, he has to move on from that. And if he can't, he's not going to be Vice President Harris. I mean, he has to, over the next 2 months, basically change his positions on that and that talking point, taking that right off the table. Because it does. I think that's where he's hurting himself with those blank voters and even some Republican voters.
Jerry, I want to switch to a different subject here, which is, Vice President Harris repeatedly during the Tuesday night debate really chose not to differentiate herself from President Biden. And, you know, she said, look, she told Trump, you're not debating President Biden. You want to be running against him. You're running against me. That's true. But substantively on policy, she didn't repudiate or really meaningfully branch off from Biden. And, you know, right now, Biden's numbers are not popular. Is that a problem for her with the undecideds? If you were part of the campaign, if you're in that room privately, would you have wanted her to do more to differentiate herself?
No, I thought she threaded that needle pretty well for a couple of reasons. One, so I'm from North Carolina, and Vice President Harris is in North Carolina today. I just came back from North Carolina a few days ago, and like you, I have family members that are all supporting, you know, small C conservatives that are all supporting President Trump, which baffles me. I come from the same family. And all the way from, you know, Western New York to Western North Carolina, I passed through Pennsylvania and West Virginia and Virginia onto North Carolina. All I saw was Trump signs. It's a big reminder of Hillary, and I'm a little worried about that. And I watched the price of gas as I filled up my car going down the road. And yes, gas is much cheaper in the South than it is here. And I asked my family members and friends in that region, why is there so much support for Trump here? And they all had the same answer that was fed to them, I believe, directly from Fox News. It was talking points. And they don't even know each other. And they all sang the exact same talking points back to me. And I really do feel like under Biden, it's been one of the most successful presidencies if you look at actual metrics. And the economy is actually not as bad as they are presenting it to be. And actually, in some research I've seen, it's the economy is actually better under Biden than under Trump, even removing the COVID from the factoring in. But what it is the rural areas did not recover as well because there's not a high-tech infrastructure there. So the people that are the most likely to be a conservative are also in those rural areas that have not benefited from broadband internet and the high-tech infrastructure. And some of them are from states that aren't run by the government that would, you know, embrace those things that the government has offered them. So it's, I think it's a perception problem. But in terms of her, like, distancing herself from Biden, he's been a very successful president in every metric that you look at.
Well, I'll let Sean respond to that in just a second. Again, a lot of this conversation is meant to talk to these two experienced people in politics about what they think will actually swing people from a debate like we just saw. So let me ask you, I mean, when you go to North Carolina and as you say, you see a lot of Trump signs and you hear from your family and they're not moved, they're staying with him. I wonder how they think about his comments about denying the election. I mean, the reason that I have felt differently about American politics for much of the last decade is it feels, for the first time in my lifetime, we're going through these elections not knowing if people are going to agree to a peaceful transition of power. And in 2020, for the first time, we did not see a losing candidate agree to a peaceful transition of power. And that scares me. That is a different level of, like, I'm very baffled by this idea that we can say, well, I don't like that, but... But at the same time, that's exactly how millions of Americans feel. They don't like it, but it's not moving them. Do you think that issue moves anybody anymore in the middle?
Are you asking me that, Evan?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I don't. So I think Trump is, he knows his audience. And so he's tapping into, in a manipulative way. He really doesn't believe most of what he says. He just wants to, you know, get his Machiavellian ends. His ends justifies means. But what he's tapped into, and he recognized over a decade ago, is that region of the electorate is suffering. And if he can tap into their fears and fear, you know, the amygdala in the brain firing is an incredibly powerful thing to get you to the vote. Fear is a huge motivator. And look at him from Tuesday night. Almost everything he said was about fear. So I don't think that those people that we're speaking of that are, you know, always going to be Trump supporters will ever be swayed. He even said, you know, he could shoot someone on 7th Avenue and they wouldn't care. He's very good at reading his audience.
I got to fact check you there. He said 5th Avenue.
Oh, excuse me, 5th Avenue. But it made me sad because these are good people in my family, good people I grew up with, and I feel like they're being hoodwinked, and it breaks my heart. And I had a very good conversation with some of them last week while I was there, and there's this perception that Vice President Harris is evil. And one of the memes that I saw, I could not believe someone that I went to school with was posting a picture of Trump with this flags and angel wings behind him ascending into heaven, and then beneath it was Vice President Harris in a satanic outfit. That's the perception that's out there. And it was shocking to me because there's nothing about her like that. It was very sad.
Well, you say that you want to convince people in North Carolina, your native North Carolina, that the economic record of Biden's actually better than they think. And that you're hoping that they see it that way. Right now in the polls, again, just looking at where Americans see the polls, you know, Biden has not been popular. And Sean McCabe, when you think about voters in the middle, undecided voters in 7 swing states, do you think it's to your party's advantage that Vice President Harris has not distanced herself very much from President Biden?
100%, because I think that's what most Americans, you know, that are in the middle are really looking at. Is, am I better today than I was? And when you tie that back, it comes through the Biden administration. You know, we can talk about different, you know, economic factors and everything else, but if you talk to Joe citizen on the street, they don't feel they're better off. The price of gas is higher, the price of food is higher, whatever the reasons are that we want to, you know, whoever we want to blame for those things, The issue is it's the Harris-Biden administration that's been in office. She talked about all these things she wanted to do moving forward, and why hasn't she brought any of that forward? The small business, the child tax credit, why haven't they brought any of that forward at this point? If you want to do those things, you know, you're relying on hopefully, you know, swinging the House and keeping the Senate Democrat, which looks like it could be an uphill battle from their standpoint. So, again, at the end of the day, the Joe American voter in those seven swing states are looking at immigration and are they better today than they were in the economy? What's going on in their world and how are they going to pay for things? How are they planning for retirement? How are they sending kids to college? Everything else. How are you feeding your family? I mean, those are the issues that are impacting people. We can talk about personality and, you know, Trump's a bad person. He's got a bad personality. He's this, he's that. We can focus on that, but Joe American doesn't care. They want their life to be better. And if they think their life can be better with President Trump in office, then that's where they're going to vote. And it comes down to, you said so well, Evan, those seven swing states. New York doesn't matter. There's other, you know, Mississippi doesn't matter. It's those swing states where people are going to make the difference.
So if you're in the room with him, Sean, you're saying we do want another debate and you're not going to be baited into talking about your rallies or other weird stuff. We are focusing on the economy and we are talking about an opponent who has been in office for 4 years during that economy, almost exclusively. That's your message for Trump?
100%. 100%. That would be my sole focus.
I mean, I have to think there were people trying to get him to do that to begin with. But I'm going to put out a little call here. By the way, I want to read what conservative commentator Mary Catherine Hamm wrote. She said, I have 20 friends I could put on that stage without major prep who do not even particularly like Trump, but would nevertheless have found openings, defended his record, and defined Harris's record more ably than he did. There is no excuse for what we saw if you're in the big leagues. That's Mary Catherine Hamm. So a very conservative commentator who is not voting for Kamala Harris. Listeners, I'm going to put out a call for phone calls, and this will probably get nothing. Maybe I'm wrong. If you are undecided, I want you to call us or email me. I realize that some people believe that undecided voters don't even exist anymore. But I would like to hear from you if you're even on the fence. And I know, again, we're not a swing state. But I am curious to know about the mindset of the undecideds, the people who are in the middle, the people who just don't feel like they feel good either way. And I want to hear from you if you can. 844-295-TALK. It's toll free. 844-295-8255. 263-WXXI if you're calling from Rochester. 263-9994. You can email the program connections at WXXI.org. Monroe County Legislator Sean McCabe from District Number 6 is with us, as is Jerry Lynn Sparks, who is a former congressional press secretary and founder of the Riga Democrats. We're talking about the Tuesday presidential debate. We're talking about what moves this last remaining block of voters who could decide not to vote. They could decide to vote for Harris. They could decide to vote for Trump. And it doesn't take a big margin in Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan, Arizona, Nevada, North Carolina, Georgia. I think we got them. I think those are the states that are going to decide this thing. And so that's what we are looking at. And we'd love to hear from you of what you thought is going to move those voters. Now, I know that Jerry Lynn Sparks is going to say, you didn't mind at all that they talked a lot about abortion on Tuesday night. What did you hear on that issue, Jerry?
I thought that she was very honest. And I actually wanted to say to Sean, I don't think immigration is as important to those swing states, except for Arizona, as the abortion and the economy. For women voters, I think one of the things I think Vice President Harris could be a lot better is humanizing herself. And also talking about the issue of abortion in a slightly different way. No one wakes up today and says, oh, I want to have an abortion today. This is a very painful thing, as the Democratic National Convention actually had people on there talking about going through miscarriage, and they were going to enter sepsis if they didn't have the dead fetus taken out of them, and it could impact their future ability to have children. There's so many women in our lives that's happened to, people you probably know very closely. So I think the framing of that issue is definitely got to be a little more honestly spoken about. And for Representative Harris, she mentioned it as freedom, and I don't think that actually resonates with undecided voters. It seems callous. There is a living fetus inside. So I think there's got to be a slightly different way to speak about something that is not something anybody looks forward to. It is a healthcare issue when you have, you know, a dead fetus inside you that could affect your future fertility. So I think there's definitely something there about that. And, you know, for getting back on the messaging as a global, as Democratic Party in general, they've got to do something that comes off as less cold and callous. My friends, I have a lot of conservative friends, and they're appalled at the messaging of the Democratic Party, how they're making it about a woman's body as if the fetus doesn't exist. They've got to change that messaging and really address it in a way that is really a decent way to discuss it, if that makes sense. Am I making sense on that, Evan?
It sounds to me, Jerry, like what you think is that her message on this issue galvanizes true believers, but is not going to pull any kind of a conservative who really doesn't like Donald Trump but needs to feel more comfortable voting for a Democrat. You don't think that this language is working for them?
That's correct. I think they're halfway there. They got a little bit more to go, because really people are very much more able to understand the nuance in those situations and understand it as a private thing. One of the things that I've heard people say is that if you don't want the government in your gun closet, you shouldn't want them in your bedroom closet. But they need to take that a little bit further. If you're going to have less government intervention in your lives, you've got to talk about why that's important. I thought during the Democrat National Convention, they did really well having the husband up there talking about how he supported his wife when she almost lost her life. That was really the best way to talk about it. I think that the thing Trump said about babies, you know, being terminated after they're born, that was shocking. I'm glad Lindsay Davis, the moderator, spoke up and said that that's actually not a law anywhere in the United States. And Vice President Harris reiterated that. But it goes back to the earlier thing. Trump's tactic is fear, and he doesn't care about the accuracy of what he's saying.
Okay, so Jerry is somewhat critical of the candidate she supports, saying if she's in the room offering guidance, she would actually bring about a different idea on how to talk about abortion in a next debate or how to reach voters in the middle. Sean McCabe, if you're talking to Trump about how you're going to actually not lose votes or gain votes, pull people across the aisle or win undecideds on the issue of abortion, did you hear it on Tuesday?
Yes and no. I mean, I do think where it comes down to, I mean, I think the abortion issue in national politics is a talking point for the left and for the right, but nobody ever wants to solve it. If you really want to solve the abortion issue, it's going to take 60 senators to agree on something. That's where you're going to have to get to. And, you know, we can talk about, you know, abortion like it is in New York State or abortion like it is in Mississippi, where each state has decided to go a different course. But what if we're going to get to a federal law on abortion? It's got to be what 60 senators can agree to in a room. You know, so there is going to be some type of a limit on abortion. There is going to be some type. So, but neither party wants to do that at this point because it galvanizes and is a fundraiser for the wings of the party. That's the problem. I mean, nobody really wants to solve the abortion issue. It's a great talking point. Everybody wants to talk about it from both parties, but nobody truly wants to solve it. If you really want to solve it, figure out where 60 senators can agree. And if 60 senators agree, then let's get a national abortion bill in place or and, you know, limits, et cetera. I don't think anybody, I mean, I'm going to take offense to Jerry's comment about the dead fetus and the mother, that they wouldn't perform. That's not true. Nowhere in this country are they not removing a dead fetus from a mother. That's an absolute...
Hold on, Jerry. Let Sean go. Yeah.
I mean, you know, that's not true. I mean, no, if the health of the mother and the fetus is dead, you're talking a totally different scenario. So that's not an accurate statement, and that's what galvanizes people is the misinformation from both sides of the aisle on abortion. Like, you know, President Trump said the other night that there are, you know, after the baby's born, we're gonna kill a baby. I mean, that's the problem with this issue. If you really want to talk about abortion and figure out where we're gonna be as a nation on abortion, unless it's where we are right now, is where 60 senators can agree, and what's that look like? And at some point, that's going to be a limit on abortion, and it's going to be the health of the mother, incest, rape, and some type of a term limit or time limit, probably most likely between 14 and 19 weeks would be my best guesstimate. You know, so, I mean, I do think that that's where both parties are using it, and it's not really, I mean, for some people, is it a swaying thing? I think it is, but in New York State, it's not going to matter. In Nevada, abortion isn't an issue. You know, in states where there's liberal abortion policies, it's not, you're not changing the voter that's really going to go. If you're an undecided in North Carolina, absolutely, that's a different conversation. Or an undecided in Georgia, that's a different conversation. But right now, it's both parties are utilizing it and not really looking for a solution. It's a talking point. Nobody wants a solution. Everybody just wants the talking point. And that's what I would tell President Trump to say if I was advising him, is get off this, you know, 100% pro. Your party's going to support you. The Republicans are going to support him unless he goes totally pro-life and says, yup, up until the moment of birth, you can have an abortion. Unless that becomes his talking point, the diehard Republicans are going to support him. He has to talk about where this country can realistically go and what we realistically need to do.
Okay, Jerry, go ahead.
Okay, so did he not, I don't know, Sean, if you watched the Democratic National Convention, but they actually had women on the stage saying that their doctors in certain states were afraid to do a dilation and curettage to remove the baby that doesn't have a heartbeat from them. They had to go home and expel the baby naturally. And during that time, one of the women developed sepsis and nearly died. So sadly, that is happening. And my question to you and anybody, why can't a woman and her doctor make that type of medical decision? Why does the government have to be involved in a situation like I just described? I don't understand that.
Sean?
I mean, I think at some point it becomes if you see a doctor that decides he doesn't really want to do abortions, you're locking that person in then. I mean, I do think there's an avenue that we have to agree to, and we can both talk about hypotheticals all day long. But at the end of the day, I'm not a medical professional. You're not a medical professional. So, again, I don't know how we're going to get to a solution where the doctor is going to decide. Well, if you have a conservative doctor that doesn't want to perform abortions, I guess that's going to be a problem then. You know, or you have a super liberal doctor, you're going to be in the same problem. So, I mean, I do think there has to be some type of a standard. And it's a divisive issue in this country that eventually I would like to see us get to a point where we have some type of a federal law on abortion and going from there.
So I would like to say that Sean, I appreciate your comments, but what I actually said was there was a doctor who was afraid that the law would prevent them and prosecute them from doing the standard of care that the doctor actually needed to perform. So the doctor wasn't unwilling to do a DNC to take the fetus that no longer had a heartbeat out of the woman to save her future fertility. She was afraid, and so the woman had to get on a plane and fly to a state that didn't have that restriction, where doctors aren't afraid of being prosecuted for giving the woman the health care she needed to remove the fetus that no longer had a heartbeat. So she ended up having a near life-threatening situation because of that. That's what I'm saying. It wasn't a doctor's moral concerns. The fetus was already dead, and they were afraid that the doctor was afraid they would be prosecuted for doing the DNC to remove the now dead fetal tissue. That actually is an actual case. It's not a hypothetical. It's sad, but it's an actual case.
And Jerry's point is this is what you want to see the Democratic ticket focus on, to try to pull people across the aisle and say, we don't have to be ideological. I think everyone would agree that this is a really bad situation. That's where Jerry wants to go. Now, Sean, one more question on this issue. President Trump on Tuesday, two different times, refused to say if he would veto a national abortion ban. J.D. Vance has said that former President Trump would veto a national abortion ban, but he would not affirm that on Tuesday. Should he have, or, you know, how would you wanted to see him answer that question?
I mean, I think you have to... from a political standpoint, I do think he should have answered that question. And I think right now it's in the state's issue. I mean, it's a state's rights issue at this point from the Dobbs decision, state issue all the way across. So until legislation comes forward that everybody can look at and, you know, talk about and decide, and it's got to pass. I mean, it's got to pass the House. It's got to pass the Senate. And it's going to have to, you know, and then if it gets to his desk, he's going to veto it or sign it into law. But, I mean, I think it's such a hypothetical at this point because it's not a reality. And if the Democrats win the House or the Democrats keep the Senate, it's definitely not a reality. So So I think it's a – we can talk hypotheticals all day about a national abortion ban, but I think it's so far-reaching at this point, and I think it's so far down everybody's radar screen and first coming into office and figure out where we're going to go. Because, again, abortion, it's a states' rights issue, and states are deciding whether you like your state or don't like your state. And New York is open for abortions. Governor Hochul has said that you can come from anywhere in the country. I'll be happy to do your abortion for you. So, no. I mean, people have the.
No one's ever happy to, quote, do your abortion for you. I think that's really not a very polite thing to say. It is never a happy day when someone has an abortion.
Okay. Well, Sean, you want to respond to that? Because I've got other things I want to hit here. Go ahead, Sean.
No, you know, you can go ahead.
That's okay. We're talking to Sean McCabe and Jerrilyn Sparks about responding to what might have moved people in the debate on Tuesday night and what going forward the campaigns can do to pull across the remaining undecideds or voters who are maybe unsure, have chosen a side but are not firm in that yet. And I want to encourage all of our listeners, please take my advice and watch the PBS NewsHour report from a couple of nights ago on Springfield, Ohio. And we'll post it in our show notes. It is a great piece of reporting. I want to just briefly tell you, I'm going to try to sum it up quickly, but you ought to watch the PBS NewsHour reporting on this, and you ought to share it. The story of Springfield is that it was a town of about 80,000 people in Ohio, and it got hollowed out, as so many Rust Belt towns did, by manufacturing and jobs leaving. It goes from 80,000 people to around 50,000 people. Population going down. Church pastors saying that no one's showing up in church anymore. All kinds of similar issues that towns like, you know, Rochester to an extent and so many others across the Midwest have had. And then over the last several years, a large number of Haitians, 12,000 to 15,000, have moved to Springfield. Now, they moved starting during the Trump administration under an order that was extended during the Biden administration that allows for a temporary right. It's a legal form of immigration. It is temporary. It has been extended because of the crisis in Haiti. And these families are looking for work. They're looking for housing. And they hear that Springfield has pretty cheap housing because a lot of people have moved. And there was actually bigger companies moving back to Springfield who were hiring and didn't have enough people to work there. So Haitians in large numbers moved to Springfield in recent years. Now, in some ways, that's a very, very positive thing. In fact, the church pastor saying their churches are rocking on Sundays. I mean, the church is filled and people are singing. The employers who PBS NewsHour talked to said that Haitians are phenomenal workers. They show up early. They stay late. They're extremely reliable. They do not fail drug tests. The mayor says they don't have an issue with any additional crime. They do have issues with services. A lot of Haitians speak French. They don't speak very good English, and there needs to be a lot more help in a short amount of time for schools, for hospitals. They need more healthcare services. They need people to help teach driving because Haitians have a lower per capita of driving in Haiti, and that's a real problem. They're concerned about some safety issues there. So there's a lot of things that have to happen, and Governor DeWine in Ohio says he's treating this like you would treat it like a natural disaster where you need services in a short amount of time. But he also said that, you know, he defers to all of the talk about whether Haitians are breaking into your house and stealing your dogs and cats and eating them as just baloney. There's not a single case of someone who says, here's the picture of my dog and my dog is gone. And in fact, that kind of, I mean, we could be having a really smart conversation about immigration, legal immigration, or we could perpetuate this idea that people who largely look different than the people in Springfield are just evil and intentionally stealing their pets and butchering them on a rope in their yards and eating them, which is not happening. And instead, we've got one candidate on stage saying that to a national audience. Well, today, there are bomb threats in Springfield. And a lot of kids aren't going to school. And a lot of Haitians aren't going to work. That is the result of this kind of. We need to have a smart conversation about immigration. So watch the PBS NewsHour story. It's not necessarily an easy situation, but there's a lot more nuance to this. And I just want to ask you, Sean McCabe, if you thought there was, you know, what in the world are you going to say to Donald Trump if you're in the room advising him and he's out there talking about they're eating our dogs, they're eating our dogs? What are you going to say to him?
He totally missed the immigration point when he did that. I mean, there was so much to talk about in regards to human trafficking, the fentanyl that's pouring across our borders, the, you know, you look at the number of people pouring across our borders, or all several of them, the majority of them are fighting age males. It makes you wonder when it comes to it. Those were the points to talk about, not that Haitians are eating cats in Springfield, Ohio. I mean, that was he totally missed a beat. I mean, and I don't know if it, I don't even know where that came from and why that was one of his talking points or why that popped into his head, because I do think the fentanyl crisis, the human trafficking crisis, and the people pouring across our border, and then the impact that has on our communities at home, whether it's schools, medical services, like the things you just talked about in your PBS NewsHour, you know, getting people to learn how to drive, foreign language, all of those services, communities are having to pick up, and there's a significant cost to that. So, I mean, those were the points to focus on when it came to immigration, not people eating cats and dogs. I mean, that was a horrible myth, and I would imagine his whole campaign staff pretty much cringed at that point. Like, what are you doing? You missed an opportune point to really call Vice President Harris and the Biden administration out on immigration and what's occurred in our country over the last 3.5 years. And, you know, the cost to our taxpayers, you know, whether it's, you know, fentanyl overdoses, you know, kids that have died, adults that have died, the human trafficking and the horrors associated with that. And then just the, obviously, the burden on taxpayers in schools across the country, in our hospitals, et cetera, where we're treating all of these illegal immigrants and the cost factor behind that. That's where I think he missed the boat.
Okay. Jerilyn Sparks, what did you see there?
Well, I wanted to start off my comment by saying that both of my cats are marked safe from being eaten by immigrants. So thank God for that. I do believe that it is how he started his first presidential campaign, the fear-mongering. At the time, it was against Muslim Americans, so it seems to be par for the course. He didn't miss anything. He was intentional. The hatred is intentional. The cruelty is intentional. The divisiveness is intentional. So he didn't miss anything. This is exactly who he is, and he's shown us repeatedly that he will grab women by their private parts, and they'll let you do it, he said, because he's famous, and no one's holding him accountable. But Vice President Harris did was finally hold him accountable. And I think that people in the campaign that worked for him have to know that this is who he is. And, you know, him, he seems to have a real fixation with cats, like he and J.D. Vance, like the childless cat ladies, and, you know, worrying people about whether their pets are safe. It's like, you know, Sean said, he's definitely focusing on the same thing, but that's who he is, and it's intentional.
But how does that affect those voters in these seven states who are watching this? Are they rolling their eyes but saying, that's not going to change my mind? Or do they see that and go, like, what is going on here? Because clearly Vice President Harris believes that those voters are seeing that, thinking that this, there's some cognitive decline going on. There is something off here. What do you think, Jerry?
So I do believe that there's a concept called cognitive dissonance, and the things that you believe versus your actions can make you feel uncomfortable if there's a difference between them. And so I believe the Trump voters who are, I think they're experiencing cognitive dissonance if they're continuing to vote for a man that does all these terrible things. So you have to feel uncomfortable voting for a man who says the terrible things about women and who has said awful things about Haitian immigrants now, like they're eating your cats and pets. Like, but I talked to my family members and my friends in North Carolina about these, well, not the cat thing, because that's the latest crazy thing he said. They don't care. All they care about is one issue, and the conservatives, it's the abortion issue. And the second thing they care about is the rural local economy. And I don't, my biggest fear, and the reason I said I was concerned about the Democrats choosing Vice President Harris, is that she's not going to be able to move them just because of the fact she's a Democrat. And there's some people, some voters, that are not going to feel comfortable voting for a woman as president, sadly. I don't think that we should change our candidate because of that, but I am really concerned. It shouldn't be this close. If you look at the crazy things that Donald Trump has said and done, the fact that this is that close shows you that there's a lot of cognitive dissonance and bias out there.
Okay, let me hit before I get one more email, let me just ask Sean on that point. Vice President Harris, late in the debate, said that when you look at a candidate who will not accept election results, it indicates a level of confusion. I think she used that word intentionally because, mm-hmm. you know, she knows that the reason she's on the ticket right now is because President Biden, over his term, has declined cognitively quite a bit, very visibly. And that was no longer deniable after the June debate with Donald Trump. And what she wants to do now is ask voters, do you not see the same thing in the man standing next to me who is almost Joe Biden's age? Do you think that moves people? And Sean, are you worried about cognitive decline there?
I guess my concern is if we're so concerned with cognitive decline with President Biden, why didn't they use the 25th Amendment? And so I do look at that as, you know, I mean, it's acceptable on some level, but it's not. And I mean, it's been a pattern that the country's been talking about it. And, you know, I'm going to agree with Jerry. This race is close. And that tells you exactly why. I mean, President Trump has made multiple stumbles in this campaign, and that it's this close is really a testament of how dissatisfied the American people are with the Biden-Harris ticket. And I think that's the key. That's going to be the key driving force over the next 7 weeks is the dissatisfaction of the American voter. And I mean, I do take offense a little bit that anybody voting for President Trump, in Jerry's words, are deplorables. I mean, you know,
I didn't say deplorable. I don't put words in my mouth. I did not say deplorable.
In not so many words, you basically said that. So I mean,
cognitive dissonance going on in some of them.
Yeah, in some of them. But again, people choose their candidates. I mean, I don't begrudge anybody voting for who they feel is best to lead them in whatever office it is, and however they feel about that. That's your choice. I'm not going to argue politics and try to get you to vote for Donald Trump. You're never going to vote for Donald Trump. I'm never going to vote for Kamala Harris. That's fine. We both have our views, and I respect your view. And I hope you respect my view. But at the end of the day, the key is these undecided. That's who matters. That's who matters for both parties. And that the race is this close at this point speaks volumes.
Yeah, the reason I asked that, Sean, is because I think what Democrats were really struggling to admit over the winter into the spring toward the summer this year was that undecideds had decided that Joe Biden was no longer fit to be president. And I think that he was going to lose and lose pretty big because the undecided voters saw that. And I guess I'm wondering, you know, as a Trump partisan, do you see those same voters worried about that same issue with Trump? Sounds like you don't think it's quite to that level.
I don't think it's quite. Trump has a lot of bluster. I think he, you know, like the cat and dog thing the other night, I think was a horrible action. I think he was too loud. He was too aggressive in his answers. But again, I think in a second debate, hopefully his team can clean that up. And I don't think at the end of the day, he appears to be as dysfunctional as President Biden has been over the last year. And that swayed voters. I do think voters are going to lean more towards him when it comes to that. And they don't see that cognitive dysfunction that, you know, some see.
Greg emails to say, I'm just going to kind of edit it here. Greg emails to say, let's all resolve as Republican voters that we are moving on from Trumpism after this disaster is over. I think he's going to lose for Harris. I can't become a fan of Harris. I'm sorry, Evan, but I'll go along with your guest and say we should nominate Nikki Haley next time. Let's make a promise that we are moving on now. That is from Greg. Okay, Sean, what do you think?
I agree. I mean, I do think after, you know, no matter what happens in 6 or 7 weeks, that the Republican Party needs to move on from the Trump administration. And hopefully in 4 years, we have an actual primary. I mean, I think both parties lacked a true primary process that this country is used to. And we ended up with two people that really didn't compete in primaries. I mean, you know, President Trump didn't do any debates with Governor DeSantis and former Governor Haley. There was no, I mean, Kamala Harris, the last time she ran, she didn't even make the primaries. She was out, and now she's the anointed one. She didn't have to, you know, do debates with her opponents and have conversations with whoever might have been in the running from the Democrat standpoint. So I think for this whole country, we need a better process the next time. It needs to be the process that I think we're all used to, where there's two primaries, there's, you know, there is a process to pick the candidate that's a little more reasonable than it was.
Do you think is there buyer's remorse? Do you think your party, do you think Ron DeSantis would be winning this election?
I do. I think him and both, I think both Nikki Haley and him, it would be substantial. Okay. I do. I think DeSantis and Haley would be far out in front of Kamala Harris at this point.
All right. So as we get ready to close here, less than 2 minutes to go, Jerry Lynn Sparks, your final message for how you want to see this campaign handle undecided voters in the next 6 to 8, whatever we got left here, 6 weeks, 8 weeks.
I think Vice President Kamala Harris, that's how her name is said, needs to get out and humanize herself and speak to the people individually as much as she can. So it's going to be a lot of boots on the ground. And also just to know that what she said the other night about being a gun owner, I thought was really smart to smack down those other fear-mongering that former President Trump has put out there. And also they've got to talk about former President Trump's deteriorating mental health. He also has repeatedly referred to President Obama and not realizing who he's running against even during the debate the other night. So there's definitely some things with, you know, eating cats that are a big indicator that they can capitalize on that, but also just really go out face-to-face meetings as much as they can to humanize her. And also, I just want to say that I used to be a Republican. I have voted for Republicans even once I was a Democrat. So I am not, just completely without ability to cross the aisle. And I think the country is strongest when we have bipartisanship, and I really am a big believer in that.
All right, Sean, what would you say to Trump, and what do you want to see them focus on in the last 8 weeks or so?
The economy. Are you better off today than you were 4 years ago? I think that's the key factor to be focused in on. Are you better? And if you're not, vote for me.
I want to thank our guests for making the time. Monroe County Legislator Sean McKay. I don't even know where Sean is. He's on the road somewhere, and he took time for this program, which is a generous thing to do. Legislator, thank you for that. I hope to see you in person sometime soon.
Yes, let's hope so. Thank you so much for having me, Evan.
That's Sean.
Thank you, Jerry, for a great conversation.
That's Sean McKay.
Yeah, thank you.
Jerry Lynn Sparks. Yeah, go ahead, Jerry. Finish it up. Go ahead.
I'm headed to Ohio this weekend. I'll be sure to look for any pet safety issues.
I think, as Governor DeWine said this morning, it's not a swing state, but there's a tight race for Sherrod Brown in the Senate, the incumbent there. There's a lot going on in every state. Jerry Lynn Sparks, former congressional press secretary and founder of the Riga Democrats. Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you.
More connections coming up in a moment.